Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Giant Mess, a super sloppy sports entertainment talk show that's hosted by a giant mess. That's me, the real Cinch, Neil Lynch. I'm a New York Giants football fan, Mets baseball fan, and I love movies, TV, and comedy. We'll get into some movie talk. I went to see Civil War in theaters, so I'll give you my thoughts on that. So without further ado, let's get it started up in here. Civil War came out on Friday, April 12th, 2024. I remember seeing there was a map of the United States that leaked like months ago that revealed a divided America, where it showed the, you know, map of the United States and all the states and like where their allegiances lied. You know, oh, this is this, this is this, this is this. I don't think that was the correct map, at least not from what I've gathered, but it definitely stoked my interest. And then I saw the promos and the trailers and the spots, and I was like, fuck yeah. It had like the Purge vibe to it, you know, very purgy in its approach and its style. But it, and I can see this being a franchise that could turn into the Purge. Will it? Probably not, but I could see it. And I would like to, I personally would like to have two more of these movies, because with this one, they did not get too in depth with like the details and the backstory and the exposition. It was essentially like you're dropped into the action and you're getting little tidbits of information here and there, but it's not like, how did we get to this point? Who's what? They're what and why and how? And, you know, they're not a lot, you have a lot of questions, but it's not to the point where it's like, well, I'm out. This is too overwhelming. It's just like, well, I want to know more. Please, more. I need to know more. Do you want to know more? Yes. So this is from writer-director Alex Garland. If you don't know Alex's work, he wrote 2007 Sunshine, the updated Dread movie from 2012, not the Sylvester Stallone one, the one that people actually is, I guess, a cult favorite, like didn't do as big box office as the Sly Stallone one, but is better, more well-received by critics and audiences. He also directed Ex Machina, so good. Annihilation, also so good, although that ending is like, feels, whoa, boy. Yeah, questioned reality. And then Men, which I didn't know that he did Men, but giggity. But I, after seeing Civil War, I think I should check out Men. I just thought, like, I was like, this is going to be another fucking movie about how men stink and suck and, like, well, the worst and da da da. I was just like, I don't know if I want to really go through that again. But I ended up watching the trailer and I think I might give it a shot. So what's funny is this Alex Garland dude is British. And so a lot of people were coming down on him for what he interpreted as the how America's future is heading, or the path and like the allegiances and whatnot, and how the Civil War comes about. So, but essentially this is a journey, like going into this, I thought it's like, oh, red states versus blue states. It's going to be your traditional, like Trump supporters versus, you know, the bleeding heart liberals, or, you know, snow, you know, it'll be like just that. And it was not. It's kind of a road trip movie with embedded war journalists, photojournalists and writers, columnists, correspondents that are following the Civil War. Like, the Civil War has started. It's happening. Places have seceded their allegiances. Like, you're in the middle of it. You're in the thick of things. It's not like, oh, there's going to be this big inciting incident event, and that's going to kick off the Civil War, and we're going to see how that all develops. No, you're dropped right in the middle of it with these journalists, which I really liked. I liked it a lot. It's also from A24, and like they kind of don't miss. Love A24. This is A24's biggest budget that they've ever spent, $50 million, which does not sound like a lot. And considering the success, I mean, success is, you know, how you define it. But I think they're one of the more successful distributors and studios out there. It seems like almost every movie they put out, it's like good, 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 great, good, good, great. So maybe this is the kind of the launching pad starter's block for them to do even bigger, bolder stuff. Because $50 million is their largest production budget for a movie. And their opening weekend box office was the largest they've ever had. So it paid off. Will it continue to pay off? That's the other thing. Like, I was thinking about this. I checked out tickets days in advance, but then same weekend, like not too far in advance, and nothing was sold out. So I don't think this is going to like sweep the America or sweep the world or anything like that. And that's where I think we might not get a second or third movie, which stinks, because it's just like so juicy. There's so much to it, and I have so many unanswered questions. Anyway, the movie premiered at South by Southwest on March 14th, follows a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House. Rated R. Alex Garland described the film as a companion piece to the 2022 film Men. So now I feel like I don't know if that was like his sly, coy way of being like, okay, people are, Civil War is all the buzz. Not many people watched Men. This is how I get them to watch Men. It's a companion piece. The American Civil War, the first one, the actual one, also began on April 12th. The release date for this movie, exactly 163 years before the film's release. It's an hour and 49 minutes. I never felt like it dragged. I think the pacing was really great. There were only a couple of quieter, slower scenes, and it wasn't to the point of being like, okay, you're dragging this down. You're dragging this down. It was like very necessary break in the action. Like, okay, I got to catch my breath because that was fucking intense and unreal. So great job there. Kirsten Dunst, if you're not familiar, as the female lead, she plays Lee Smith, vaunted Chicago Cubs reliever, Hall of Famer, one of the top leaders in saves. No, I don't know. It's funny that, and they made a note of it too. They're like, oh, your name's Lee, just like this other person's name is Lee. It was like another photojournalist. And I was like, or I don't know, like one of the greatest relievers and closers of all time, dude. Wagner Moura as Joel, who gave me like Pedro Pascal vibes. So I don't know, like Last of Us came out in January 23. They were probably filming in 2022. This production got started in January 2022. No, I don't know. Kaylee Spaney as Jesse, the younger photojournalist, who's, I want to say college aged. You don't really know her age, but she's like aspiring, you know, and she looks up to Lee Smith. Lee Smith is Kirsten Dunst's character, is her hero, she says. Is she telling the truth? I don't know. Steven Henderson is Sammy. He's the old savvy veteran that tags along because he needs a ride to the front lines in Charlottesville, Virginia. He was also in The Dune Part 1 and 2. What's the name of his character? I don't know, but he has like the white the whites. His eyes are like all white. Nick Offerman plays the president. We don't get to see a ton of the Nick Offerman as a president. It's basically the beginning. We see him preparing for a speech about how he's the United States military is on the precipice of victory. This is a historic campaign, but he also looks kind of nervous about it. Two, we hear his voice on the radio, on the car, a little bit in the middle, and then at the very end. Oh boy, watch your six. So yeah, like I said, I thought it was going to be inspired by the January 6th insurrection. Turns out Garland wrote the movie in 2020 when COVID first hit. But I would have to think that the January 6th insurrection really gave him, you know, more than enough fodder to be like, yeah, I have the right idea here and I need to get this out into the world. Because it's I don't want to say a commentary, but it's just like holding a mirror up to society. I know that sounds so pretentious, but like how polarized we are and how vehemently fanatical we can be about a certain thing and be unwilling to discuss that and kind of reach across the aisle. And you know, I think a lot of people, myself included, thought this would be a way more political movie. And like that's where the negative reviews came in from the critics was, this doesn't take a stance. There's no political commentary. It has to, and it's like, it doesn't have to do all, any of that shit. This is a story about, they use the Civil War as a hook. This is a story about a person that has, in Kirsten Dunst, who has seen a unfathomable amount of horror and atrocities and tragedy, and she's captured it all with her camera, and she has sent it out into the world and had it published, and people still fucking fight each other and kill each other in wars and shit. And it's just, they used the Civil War was more of a hook based on the climate at the time. And I guess it's softened a bit since then, I hope. But like 2020 and 2021 felt like a fucking powder keg with, you know, the Black Lives Movement and COVID and, you know, so I don't get those critics, man. And maybe, and this is where I really hope it does. I don't think it will, because it is so grim and depressing and makes me anxious in terms of the movie, that I don't know if it's going to financially get to that point to justify a sequel. I hope it does. But, you know, again, you know, when you're talking about like very few R-rated movies these days can reach that next level, unless it's a superhero movie like Deadpool, where it uses... it is a unique take on superhero movies, right? Because it's like explicit, offensive, irreverent, that kind of thing. Ultra violent, ultra gory. To this, which is more like, it's not for families, you know, you can't bring your kids to it. It's like, you know, and maybe there is a saturation point where people are oversaturated and they feel like, ah, fucking red versus blue again. Like, I don't know if I can go down this road and da da da. Yeah, so it starts off with a suicide bombing in New York City. Like everywhere they go, there's death and destruction. They stop by, they basically congregate and they say, hey, we're going to go to DC and we want to interview the president. He hasn't been interviewed in 14 months. He has refused to give interviews to the media and the press. We want to get there because word is, rumor is, that the Western forces, which are the states that seceded, which from my research, I think is just California and Texas. So California is now the Republic, is in the movie, the Republic of California. And then Texas is the second Republic of Texas, because they already had a Republic of Texas, apparently. And so they squad up, team up to basically advance on the White House and take out the president. Not capture, kill on site. And so these, the reporter and the photojournalist are like, we got to get to DC and interview him before he's kicks the bucket, knocked off. So they, through discussion, reveal that they can't make the drive down 95. Not possible, because apparently New Jersey and Philadelphia is so fucked that they can't make the direct shot. So they have to go all the way around that big ass mess, aka where I am, this giant mess, and go via Pittsburgh. So they go drive west to Pittsburgh, which has got to be like a 5-hour drive. It's basically 857 miles from New York City to DC via the route that they're taking. And so we get to see them make several stops. They stop for some fuel in this podunk area. Three dudes with guns, you know, you don't know what side they're on. And that's a common theme throughout this movie in the Civil War. Is, you know, you think of the first Civil War, you have two sides, the North and the South. The North is blue, the South is gray. They don't want slaves. You know, so it's like very cut and dry. Like, okay, we know who's who, we know what. I'm sure there were still spies and shit, but with this movie, it's like everyone has guns, everyone's wearing camo, but don't know who's who, don't know what's what. So it's like they're going through, which I've reviewed the map, the loyalist states. So like, we'll get to the map in a little bit, but they end up going through these areas where it's like, I think these are loyalists and they are trying to fend off the Western forces that are advancing on DC. And so you have this gas station where there's three dudes with guns, and the young journalist, photojournalist, sees something off the side. She goes to look at it. It's two bodies hanging. A lot of hanging. lot of hanging in this movie. Some say lynching. I refuse to use that word because it is my last name. It's called hanging. So you get to see just how quickly people can get fucking violent as shit with little to no remorse. I mean, like the one body that hang, you know, the guy says, oh, I went to high school with that guy. Didn't really talk to him, but yeah, they're looters. They try to steal. And so now we're hanging him, but you know, blah, blah, blah. And they killed him. It's just like, okay. It feels like like if you suffer from depression, anxiety, it's almost like one of those pharmaceutical ads. It's like, do you suffer from depression, anxiety? Try Civil War. Side effects may include, and it's just like suicidal thoughts. Just like all the worst of the worst things that you can think about. Like if you were worried or concerned or scared about, you know, the state of the union, pretty much, and like how delicate, what a fine line we're walking. Maybe you watch a lot of Fox News where it's a lot of doom and gloom. Don't do that first and foremost. But this movie will not do you any favors in terms of subduing it. It'll stoke the fuck out of your fear and anxiety. So I think that's another reason why it might not make it to the next level. I really hope it does, though. I'm pulling for it. So Kirsten Dunst ends up offering the main dude with the gun, $300 for a full tank of gas and a couple of cans of gas. And he's like, $300 can buy you a sandwich. So it's like, that's where the economy is at. And he's like, you can get ham or cheese, not ham and cheese for $300. And so she says, I'll give you 300 Canadian. And he's like, all right, you got a deal. It's like, that's fucking Canucks. Like, what are the Canucks doing this during this whole thing? They're just sitting across the border like, oh, look at this, eh? Quite the scuffle. Oh, Canada. Yeah, economy has gone to shit. And it's like, yeah, dude, I buy it. My mom has been sending me real estate listings for every place we've lived. We've lived in like a dozen places, dozen houses. And they're all like, I look at the price tags on them now. I'm like, holy shit. We lived. They stop at a refugee camp organized and run by the World Health Organization or the Emergency Relief Fund, one of those two, at an abandoned football stadium. And this is a case, like, I watch this and I'm like, yes, dude, this is a real setting. And that's what I appreciate about this movie. It's like, whatever digital visual effects they used, which wasn't a ton, I don't think, all looked real. They used real settings with real people. Like, it just, it does so much for me and for the audience when that happens, as opposed to, oh, they're on a stage with a green screen. You know, it pulls you out. It pulls you out. I have to say, though, the fight scenes are fucking incredible. Like the gunfire where the Western forces are advancing on DC, like that. Oh my God, dude. Like those fight scenes were unbelievable. Almost reminiscent of in Cloverfield when the military is advancing on the Cloverfield monster. Chloe, I forget, she had a name. It felt similar to that, but more real. Like it was like, okay, this is happening. But I still can't get over these fight scenes where, like, first of all, these journalists, photojournalists, are using cameras still. We're using digital cameras and film cameras and like still photography. That's still a thing. We're still photographing. Okay. There's another duo, a team that has like the camera guy, a video camera, and a person on camera talent. And I was like, that seems more, but maybe that is, and I thought about this, like maybe that's Alex Garland's way of like a nod or homage to these people that put their life on the fucking line to get a photo, a single image that captures the moment, you know? I can't wrap my head around that these people willingly, voluntarily go into battle with a camera. And like, I don't know if there's rules. It seems like an unwritten rule. It's just like the unwritten rules of war that you can't shoot the press or the media. You can't kill them. Like, because the way that these press members and media members were acting was like, dude, you're not invisible. You're not invincible. Just because it's not like you're like NPC can't be killed. And they were, I mean, like on these guys' hips, like you know, stepping out into the line of fire to get a photo. It's just like, what the, you get, y'all have a death wish. Y'all want to be dead. So I guess I need to bone up on that and do some research, but I was just like, what the fuck? Like, okay, so the enemy is just not going to shoot you because you have a, you have the word press on your chest. Okay. There was a little bit of inconsistency there too, where it's like one scene, they're like helmet, Kevlar, blah, blah. And then the next scene is like, no helmet, none of that. And then getting in the way of the soldiers too. Like that final scene was, and I get it, it's intentional. But fuck, man, that the young journalist just constantly getting in the way of the soldiers who are trying to do their thing. Like, if I were a soldier, I'd be so pissed. Like, get the fuck out of here. But I guess there's a little bit of them that's like, we need to make sure this is documented and recorded for history. And, you know, we're making history, so I want to be a part of history, blah, 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 blah. Your ego and your need for, I don't know, recognition, acknowledgement kicks in. But it, like, there are times where, I mean, if you're like super bad guys, you just like stick out the press member, have them get shot and then advance. I was also thinking though, like, okay, so it's gotta be disconcerting for the soldiers who are trying, who have an operation, who have a like protocol and are trying to follow it, and then like keep bumping into and tripping over and having to deal with these fucking media members and press members. It also might be distracting for the opponent, for the enemy. The opponent, wow. China is up by 2 scores. I would imagine if you're the enemy, like your eye would go to that, and all of a sudden you're taking your eye off the ball and you're getting a bullet in the brain. I don't know. No thanks, dude. Insanity. And like they kind of, you know, they definitely delve into Kirsten Dunst's perspective where she's seen so much and it's like she's just numb to it all and desensitized, and now she has to take on, be an involuntarily be a mentor for this younger photojournalist, and having PTSD, you know, and she's all doing, and she says she's doing it, she claims she's doing it because she thinks that her work is gonna convince someone that this isn't right or like open their eyes. And to a certain extent, yeah, that's true. I mean, war has still kept happening. It's still happening. We're now intervening with the whole Israeli-Palestine-Hamas conflict that's going on. So yeah, it's still fucking going on. But doesn't it kind of feel like it's petering out? I don't know. It seemed like every fucking decade had a war at one point. It was like, oh, World War I, World War II. Korean War, Vietnam. Ugh. So I don't know. I guess if it, you know, it's a similar mission statement to what I've got going here. It's like, if I can make one person laugh out there, then it makes it worth it. So if there's one person that sees her work and is like, whoa, war is bad. Oh yeah, war is bad. Then, okay, I get it. But no, do I think it's going to stop? It's like, ooh, just when you think of it, yeah. They go to this idyllic small town where they're like, whoa, did we just travel back in time? Is this a Twilight Zone episode? What's going on? Because it was like nothing, everything looks pristine. There's no like death and destruction. And they go into that one clothing store and they're like, hey, to the lady who's womaning that desk, can't say manning, hey, you know, there's like a full-blown civil war going on right now. She's like, oh yeah, we don't really watch the news, pay attention to it. It's just best to stay out of it. And I was just like, pulling a South Park on us. Like, oh no, we're not getting involved in this one. Of course they walk outside and that's where the grizzly vet is like, hey, there are snipers all over the roofs. They go through a winter wonderland type exhibit. Cause I guess it's approaching, it's right around July 4th. That's when they were going to assassinate the president, was July 4th. Not sure why, but they go through this winter wonderland exhibit, you know, abandoned, I guess. No one thought to take it down. They were like, there's war, so we have other things we got to do. And there's that scene where it's like, the journalist is trying to get answers from these two, like they get shot at. They're like, what the fuck, we're press. And it's like, dude, no one cares. And then they get out of the car and they see these two guys in camo fatigues that are very quiet, very calm, very still. And they have a sniper rifle trained on this building where the shots are coming from. And so the journalist is trying to figure it out, just like we're trying to figure it out. And he's like, hey, who's shooting at you? And they're like, we don't know. And he's like, but why are they shooting? I don't know. So what are you going to do? We're going to shoot him. It's just like, there's just no explanation about like, well, here are his beliefs and convictions and we're against that. And da, 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 da. It was just like, they're shooting at us and we're shooting at them. And I think they were Western forces in the fatigues, but it's like, at one point he goes, are you, oh, I get it. You're retarded. Cause like, you know, I know we're not supposed to say the word, but like, it's just, you know, the journalist was looking for something deeper and more of a story than, no, it's basically like mano y mano. They're trying to kill us. We're trying to kill them so they don't kill us. That's basically what it's turned into. The four of them meet up, and this is the scene. These two scenes are the ones that stick out the most in my head for this movie, where it's the four of them. So you got Joel, Kristen Dunst's character, the young, I think it was Phoebe, young photojournalist and the old vet, right? They're all in the same car. And they, so Kristen Dunst is driving. Then she sees in her mirror, rear view mirror, side view mirror, that there's a car coming up on them really fast. She's like, oh fuck. Like, we're going to have to defend, you know, we're unarmed. Like, how are we going to deal with this? And it turns out it's like two other photojournalists who Joel, you know, in a drunken stupor, told them like their plans. And so now they're trying to get to where, you know, Kristen Dunst and crew are trying to go to. And then it was, this is the one scene where I was like, I think they need to do a redo on this scene. Cause I understand why it's there. Cause they have to separate. For the next scene to happen and for it to be as potent as it is and to be as powerful as it is, they need to separate. It's just the way it went down was so like, what the fuck am I watching? Basically, the car comes up right on the window and they see, oh, it's so-and-so and so-and-so. I know them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I told them. I guess I did tell them, you know, where we're going. And so the guy's like, oh, I'm sick of this guy. I'm going to get in your car. And so like, then as the cars are speeding down the road, like a back road, gets out of his car, climbs into the window of the other car. And so the young photojournalist is like, oh yeah, that looks fun. I'm going to do that. So she climbs out to her car and goes into the other car. I was like, hold up. You are surrounded by nothing but straight like violence, fear, horrors, atrocities, tragedy, blood. Like, it's just, it's a nightmare. It's a hellscape. So are you so desensitized that this is what gets the adrenaline going? This is what makes you excited about life, is like trying to go between cars at 70 miles per hour. I don't know. I would think that you'd be more akin to Kristen Dunst's character, who is just burnt out. It's just like, fuck, I've seen all this before. I'm so numb to it. Like it just didn't jive with the tone and style of the movie. It was just like, what? This is so out of place. And then, but then you see what happens next and you're like, oh, this is the best scene in the movie. And I think everyone's said as much. It's the scene with Jesse Plemons. Jesse Plemons gives a fucking unbelievable performance. It's one scene. He says maybe 5 lines, 10 lines. And it's just like, holy shit. Edge of your seat. Like, gripping your seat. Oh boy. So they end up getting separated. They lose track of the car that has the young journalist, the Phoebe or whatever. They come up the road. They see that the car has been pulled to the side of the road. It's abandoned. Both doors are open. They're nowhere to be found. They drive up the road to this farm type area. They park, they look, and they see that the young photojournalist and the driver of the car are on their knees. And there are like a bunch, two or three men in fatigues with guns. One of them is Jesse Plemons. If you're not familiar with Jesse Plemons, he was in Breaking Bad. He was in Friday Night Lights. But I think he got kind of his breakout performance in Game Night. So if you have not watched Game Night, watch it. Jesse Plemons is the cop. He's so fucking funny. He gives kind of a similar performance here, but without the humor. It's just like, I'm just going to make you all on edge the entire time I'm on screen and talking. So they decide, like, okay, we're going to approach them. The grizzly vet is like, fuck this noise. I smell death. Like, this is nothing but death. So they go and they're like, it'll be fine. We'll talk to them. They go over and Jesse Plemons gives like a masterclass on how to like intimidate and to freak out other people. You know, was it Joel says, we're Americans. He says, what kind of American are you? You know, because there is no just I'm American at this point. Now it's like, well, are you a loyalist? Are you part of the Western forces? And so, you know, he ends up saying Florida. And so he goes like, you know, because this Joel is Pedro Pascal vibes. So Jesse Plemons is like, so what kind of American are you? South American, Central American? Like, he's like, you're not American. You're from somewhere else. And so the guy, Joel, goes, I'm from Florida. And so he goes, oh, okay. So Central. this fucking guy. Whoa. And then, you know, he asked where the others are from. He asked the two journalist buddies, Joel's journalist buddies, where they're from. First guy, so Joel goes, oh, that's our colleague. Those are our colleagues. And he goes, oh, this is your colleague, and shoots the driver of the car that took Phoebe. And it's like, okay, we're going to go on a limb and say that these are not good guys. They're not on the good side. They're just straight up murdering people because, like, you know, when they show the shot is them on their knees, but then you see like this dump truck basically lifting up the backhoe bed thingy, you know what I'm talking about, and all these bodies just like falling out, dead bodies falling out into a mass grave. So, and I know what you're saying, whoa, that's probably the first and only hint that you need that these people are not great. Mass graves? So yeah, he shoots the colleague, and then he goes up to the other guy, the colleague's like assistant, partner, buddy, and is like, where are you from? And so he eventually is able to compose himself and say Hong Kong, and he goes, oh, China, and shoots him in the heart. Just like, all right, okay. You know. Yeah, so I mean the sunglasses are what really did it for me. The fact that he's wearing like full-on camo fatigues, he's got this massive like assault rifle that he's carrying, and yet he's just like wearing, they almost look like the Valentine's Day heart-shaped glasses that my daughter has. Just like, it's just so obnoxious and bizarre. But Sammy comes to the rescue. That was a fucking cool scene where it's like, yeah, because they're telling him, you're too old and slow and fat to like, what are you going to do? You're not going to run away. You can't fight. You're nothing. So for him to have that moment where he like basically gets the car and runs over the soldiers or the ultranationalists or whatever, loyalists, and runs them over, it's like, all right, you know, he ends up getting shot, and then you know, they're unable to save him. But they do make it to the Western Forces camp in Charlottesville. Loyalist generals have surrendered, and so then they accompany the Western Forces as they storm DC. A firefight occurs between the Western Forces and the Secret Service. It's just like, it's, I guess that was what was super jarring for me, was like, whoa, the American military, by all accounts, is, well, according to some people, overfunded. But the most powerful military operation in the world, right? And yet, two states secede and we can't stop them. But I think it was more than two states seceded. I think it was like half the country. But that's the thing, is like, you're thinking, oh, North versus South. It's not North versus South. And we'll get to the map in a little bit, but it's like, it's 1, 2, 3, 4 different factions. And I don't know if they're working with each other or against each other, but they all like the So the loyalist states loyal to the president, but I think the other three, Western forces, the Florida Alliance, and the People's Army, are not for the president. So yeah, I won't give away the ending, but good to great ending. It infuriates me what the young photojournalist did. Just like, oh God, it's so annoying. And then, you know, but a good ending. And I honestly feel like it does set it up for a sequel. But even if they don't have a sequel, man, what an entry. You know, because, you know, you think U.S. military, most powerful in the nation, they can probably withstand, even at half capacity, they could probably withstand and take on, you know, these militias. But, you know, people were, when they saw the actual map come out, so the first map that came out, I don't think is accurate, because there's another map that came out. Basically, the loyalist states are the entire northeast mid-Atlantic. So from Maine to South Carolina, which is interesting, and then across like Kentucky, Missouri, looks like Kansas, Colorado. Is that Colorado? Holy fuck. No, that's Colorado. Oh my God, this is my brain now. How stupid am I? Arizona, New Mexico. Yeah, Colorado, right? Then what the fuck is that state? Wyoming, Idaho. No, that's Nebraska. North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota. This is going to drive me nuts. It's going to be so stupid too. I'm going to be like, durr. Wyoming. Why the fuck did I think that was? Okay. Yeah, Wyoming. Oh my God. Brutal. So yeah, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, Alaska are all loyalist states. Then they have California and Texas, who are now considered calling themselves republics, but I think have teamed up together. I think they're the Western forces. And then you have the Florida Alliance, which is Florida, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee. And a lot of people from the South are like, oh, hell no. Those states ain't never going to join anything called the Florida Alliance. This is so funny. And then, you know, people are saying like, California is a blue state, Texas is a red state. They would never team up. And it's like, all right. But when you look at, I had it right here. There were two things that I looked at. So you look at United States by population. California and Texas are 1 and 2. California's got almost 40 million residents, known legal residents, as of April of 2020. So that's probably grown since then. And then Texas has got like almost 30 million. So you're looking at, if we're talking about, I mean, how many, you know, that's a pretty healthy chunk of people that could rise up. Florida is 3. So then my guess is Florida then recruits, you know, the bordering states and says, enough of this bullshit. So it was just an interesting take and twist, you know. And you look at the revenue, right? This is from 2022, but it's in the billions of dollars. California is just fucking smoking everyone else. $281 billion in tax revenue. Well, because they got fucking high taxes. They tax the shit out of everything. So yeah, $281 billion. Next up is New York, but then it's Texas, Illinois, Florida, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Mass, North Carolina, Ohio. So if California and Texas team up, you know, that's a pretty healthy amount of scratch, given the what's going on there. Like Electoral College, right? They have like 10, California's like 10%, Texas is at 7, Florida's at like almost 6. You're looking at, you know, almost a quarter of the nation is tied up in California, Texas, and Florida. Could it be done? I don't know. But I would love to see an exploration of this in some manner. I did think it was interesting, like during that awesome scene with Jesse Plemons, where he's asking where everyone's from, you know, and even in the conversation before that between Kirsten Dunst and the young photojournalist, you know, they open up and she says, Kirsten Dunst says, well, or the young journal says, my dad's on a farm in Missouri pretending this isn't happening. Then Kirsten Dunst says, my parents are on a farm in Colorado pretending this isn't happening. What's interesting is, oh yeah, so Missouri and Colorado are both loyalist states. Got it. That makes a lot more sense. Derp. Okay. And so it's, and what was most interesting about this is when I got back from the movie theater and I went on Twitter, World War III was trending. So war was a good four, apparently a whole lot. Metacritic, on Metacritic, they use a weighted average. It assigned the film a score of 77 out of 100, pretty damn good. Audiences surveyed by CinemaScore gave the film an average grade of B minus on an A plus F scale. I think it's low. I would go B plus, A minus. Those polled by PostTrack gave it a 76% overall positive score, with 53% saying they would definitely recommend it. Yeah, I'll take your word for it. On Rotten Tomatoes, 83% of critics, all critics, gave it a favorable review, while only 74% of top critics gave it a favorable review. All critics, the average rating was 7.6 out of 10. Top critics, 7.3 out of 10. I'm higher. I think I gave it an 8 on IMDb out of 10. 78% of verified audience members gave it a favorable review, while 70% of all audience members gave it a favorable review. The verified audience had an average rating of 3.9 out of 5, and audience gave it a review rating of 3.6 out of 5. I would go low fours, at least a 4. So I think more highly of this than a lot of people do. And I really do hope that it picks up some good buzz and people go see it. What's interesting is like Oppenheimer took off. People loved it, were all about it, and it did really well at the box office. And that was mostly grim, right? We're talking about a man who created something that killed a lot of people. And that, like, you know. So I think if something like that can still do well, perform well, then I also think that something like this could do well. But we'll see. And that's my review of Civil War. Oh, boy. All right. That's all that you need to know. There's no more to know. That's another episode of Giant Mess. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Follow me on Twitter at RealCinch. Follow me on Instagram at RealCinch. Follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/IMA. Follow me on YouTube. You can go to YouTube and see this fucking ugly mug. I mean, what more incentive do you need? Watch me visually melt down. Because the facial expressions that I give, along with the verbals, are priceless. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week. Big pre-draft special next week. What are the Giants going to do at 6? Are they going to trade back? Are they going to trade up? Quarterback, receiver, offensive lineman, cornerback. I'll answer all those questions. No, I will not answer all of those questions and more next week. So, yeah, let's get back on track, huh? Mentally, physically, emotionally. We've been through some tough times, but let's just dig our way out and keep going. You're stronger than you think you are. All right, that's enough. Adios, muchachos.